to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, the Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on WWBC AM 1510. We're also on three FM stations, 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We have an action-packed show today. Lots of valuable unscripted information, just like sitting with friends and sharing thoughts and ideas and finding out what they do. This is really going to be fun, Ellen. And we also... online, go ahead and give out our online for people who are tuning in online.
Yes, SitaMediaInc.com.
Yeah,
and we are also on 1510 WWBC live on demand. So all you have to do is hit that live on demand button and you will hear us.
Right. And we've had a lot of people downloading our shows.
Yes, still.
I am
about
surprised.
1,800 to 20, I think it was 2,400 downloads we had 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
it was incredible. So thank you all so much for listening. And
yeah, and for our sponsors.
For participating, yes.
For everyone who helps sponsors the show so we can keep WWBC on air, because we are helping the station as well as our community when we have a voice in our community. And for all our sponsors, MedFast, Urgent Care Centers.
Jockhoff and Associates.
Sleep Dixie
Nine.
Crosswords.
Dixie
Crosswords.
Dixie Crossroads.
Sleep Nine or Cloud Nine?
Cloud Nine Sleep Shop. I got that backwards. Sorry,
yes,
Kimmy.
Yes, yes, yes. And I can't thank Pat and Alan Jockhoff enough for what they do for me and for our show. And
For the community, too.
Yes,
they're
yes.
Great,
they're just awesome.
Activists.
I mean, I've never met anyone so generous and kind and actually believe in our show. So thank you all. But anyway, so of course, yesterday was Mother's Day, and I hope everyone had a really good Mother's Day, because I miss my mom, but I worked in the nursing home.
Yes.
And I took care of our elderly patients.
You took care of many moms yesterday.
Yeah, and a lot of them, you know, they were so excited that I was there, and a lot of them didn't have a lot of visitors, but we had a tour. We had a lot of people came in, and we had a tea party. Then my sister came and brought me lunch, which was nice, and I took off a tour of our facility, and she just loved it. She couldn't believe how nice it was. But it's nice to be with people, you know, society and as a whole, we are a family. You know, we are a village. No matter where you live in the world, if someone is hurting, we hurt with them. If someone doesn't have a parent, we're there to help. Today we're going to talk about the Homeless Coalition with Dr. Moore.
Yes.
We're going to talk, you know, we are one. So I didn't feel as though as sad as I thought I would, because a lot of those patients, residents, they needed someone to give them a hug.
Well, in our little
Mother's
band,
Day.
We played at Thursday at Town Square up in Vieira, and then we played on Friday at Buena Vida, one of our favorite places.
Right, they're
so
also
really
sponsor
nice.
Of a show, which
and
is
once,
wonderful.
Yep, and it was a very nice celebration for them as well. Got
right.
To play some great music.
And so today we have a really good show. We have Ayana and John Verdi is here from the Echo Verdi School. So yes. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, and a striking couple. She was supposed to be a vet. She ended
right.
up in
once upon a time.
And he's retired law enforcement.
Right.
And we also have Dr. Miriam Moore. She's also retired law enforcement too. Welcome right. to the show. You're going to be talking about the Brevard Homeless Coalition.
Yes.
Yes, and we have Rob here as well. We have Rob Cramp. Is it Cramp?
Yep.
Right.
From Housing for Homeless.
I don't know why when I say Cramp, I'm thinking somebody needs a pill.
Right.
It's a nurse
right.
coming out of me. If
I've
it was Cramp.
With that all my life.
You don't need a pill. And then we also have George.
Yes.
George my
Jelly.
brother's name was George. He passed away quite a few years ago. So welcome to the show, George. George is a friend of Ellen's.
Thank you so much.
And every once in a while, Ellen and I like to share the experience on our radio show here with our friends. And so I'm grateful that you brought him.
Yes.
You know, every day we learn something new, no matter who it is or where it's from. And we also learn that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. And I think that's one of the reasons why our show does well, is because we do respect the fact that we live in the greatest nation on earth. Some may disagree with me, but coming from where I was born and raised in Trinidad and Tobago and hearing about all the ills of society, in Myanmar and Syria and Iran and all over the country, I do feel blessed that I am here. And so I try to give back to my listeners and people here in the United States because God has been good to myself and my family through hard work and sacrifice. So it's good to be here, back on air, right?
Yes.
You weren't here last week. We missed you.
I know. I missed you too.
Yeah.
I missed you too. But so, I can tell you that Charlotte, North Carolina is still healing. And the trip that I made up there was pretty eye-opening, actually. I'll go into it off-air with you.
Yeah.
Let you know about how that went. But
I was in Charlotte, North Carolina. I was a delegate for President Barack Obama for our state, for Brevard. And I loved the state. The people, they were nice. They treated me really good. The police force there were great.
Yes.
And they walked me home because I had a little bit too much to drink.
Oh. Well, there's a true confession here, and it's not even 105 yet.
Which was a hotel, like a couple blocks right there, which was really nice. Anyways, but so we're going to talk, our first segment, we're going to speak with Ayanna and John, and I want to talk to them about the community school that they have, this local community school, that it's a classroom, but you've taken it, and you've used what we have right here in Brevard County, Florida, to teach our children about life, academic life, life outside of the classroom, and it's just beautiful. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, Ayanna, and then we'll have John tell us about himself as well. And how this got started?
Oh, yes. Well, thank you for having us. We're super excited to be here and feel honored to be a part of the Brevard County community. So the Verde Eco School is a not-for-profit urban farm school. We use the community of the Ogalley Arts District as our campus. So we spent a lot of time cultivating some really meaningful relationships with businesses there, institutions like the Fusiner Art Museum, the Ogalley Library, the Civic Center, the Florida Historical Society, to share with our children a more immersive experience. You know, so often our children come to view school and learning as happening within the walls of a classroom inside of a building. And I think we forget that getting them out into the community where we really want them to affect change is going to be the most profound for them. So we work with our educators to develop a curriculum that charges our children with just that, the responsibility to get out into the community.
So it's the typical curriculum plus?
I don't know that I would call it typical.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the curriculum and what that looks like.
So essentially, you know, a curriculum is a series of learning moments, right? A curriculum says that a child should have an engaging experience when they go to school. They should learn their ABCs, but we hope that they'll learn a bit more. Sometimes it's those experiences where you pick up that thing that wasn't on the test that sticks with you for life. So we like to kind of focus on those moments in between, certainly learning grammar and learning history and learning about the importance of the environment in your place is exciting. But what about those moments in between where you speak to an expert on entomology and decide, I think I want to be an entomologist? Or you go out on a kayak in the Indian River Lagoon, which is one of the most diverse estuaries in the world, and say, wow, this is in my backyard. You know, maybe I'm going to take a water sample.
It's a lot of hands-on.
Yes.
I talk about that, like, as a kid, too, that we never took, like, Disney World trips. We went to Arlington National Cemetery, and we went to all of these different places. And I think parents back then probably did a lot more of that than they do now. So it's great that they have that.
Right here.
Children have that opportunity.
Yes.
So, John, how do you get so many businesses to come together and cultivate such a dynamic campus?
You know, it's funny. When you sit down and you speak with them, they want to be a part of what's going on. They see the promise in what we're doing, and it's all positive. So they actually, we have businesses that come to us and ask us, how can we help? How can we be a part of what you guys are doing? In the beginning, a little rough, not going to lie.
It's so convincing. What are you going to do? The kids are outside?
Yeah, because
are they farming?
Because, you know, when you hear schools, it's a traditional, everybody thinks it's a brick and mortar building, but you just park your car, go in, and you sit in air condition here in the United States anyways.
Right.
Not all over the world they have air conditioning classes.
But the biggest impact is with the families being part of the school, that it's not a place that you just drop your children off. It is a place where
they're
you
part
are
of it. Yeah.
your family is part of the school.
It's more than interactive. Yes. So we've modeled it after cooperative schools around the world where we pull in staff representatives, we pull in parent representatives to say the growth of this school, the promise of this school rests in our hands. It's not just an administration who floats in an office somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's truly run by the families.
So how long has it been in existence?
So we founded the school, we founded the not-for-profit in July of 2016. Our first farm classes started that September. Our first full-time program started in February of 2017. And between February 2017 and May, so that's kind of the way the semester works in Florida, the school year ends in May. From February to May, we had our first 12 families. And unfortunately, from that first semester to our next, we lost like 80% of our families. So we learned that we had to speak a little bit more to the community, to what the community wanted to see, and do a better job at sharing what the vision was.
Right, and so, getting the word out too about what you're doing, because, you know, Ellen is right. You know, my father had an old Austin Cambridge, I still remember, PF 2410. And in those days, people didn't have seat belts and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so he would load up, at any given time, maybe 11 of us in that car. We sat like, but if we went to the beach or if we went to look for an old relative, everything in their life was around teaching. So on the car ride, even though you're cramped and you're squished, they would talk about the importance of visiting an elderly person. Mm-hmm. They would talk about the importance of going to the beach and maybe cleaning it up. Mm-hmm. Or they would talk about the importance of planting. Mm-hmm. And of course, we all see what's happening right now with the soybean crops and what's mm-hmm. happening with China and the mm-hmm. tariffs and all that. And we understand farmers are suffering in a few states in the United States. And it brings back memories of, even though it was on a small scale, the idea was planted that we should take care of the earth. We should plant. We should look out for each other. And I do remember those things more than I remember what I learned in a book. Because it was a collective feeling, all of us doing it together.
And
so I love that.
Those are those things in between that we spoke about. And that's what we saw when we first started, that first semester to the second, is that there's a real shift in our education system where some parents are still holding on to this idea of standardization is the way. Our kids must take these tests and learn how to be great test takers and get into the great college. And then there's this shift of parents who are saying, wait a minute, but this test is not teaching them how to live and how to interact with the world and how to be an individual.
And problem solve.
What about that? What about collaboration?
And divergent thinking,
Yes,
like everything doesn't have to fit into a box.
Yes, correct. And our public schools are doing some incredibly innovative things in terms of design thinking and ed tech, these wonderful maker spaces. But what about that space in
You're
between?
Giving me chills, Ayanna.
You know? But that's what we learned between that first semester and the second, that we'd built a community around maybe people who weren't quite ready. And then the second time around, we had 30 families. Now we have 65 families in less than 3 years. And that's what that community is built around, saying collaboration. I want my kids to learn the bit in between.
Right. So, John, where are you getting the referrals from for the Eco Verde School?
I mean, the businesses?
Yes. Like, but for your students and families, where do you get your referrals from? From the businesses or just the community?
Oh, we get about, I mean, it goes from everywhere. I mean, I do a story time for children every Monday at a local coffee shop called Anaya in the O'Galley Arts District. It's at 9:30. It's totally for free for children ages 1 to 3.
How many kids did you start with?
And I started with 4 kids, and now I'm approximately 40 to 50 deep every week.
Well, people are hungry for that human connection.
Yes.
They really are.
And then we do it also on Fridays at the Lipscomb Community Center with Club Esteem. And we do that in partnership with the Melbourne Police Department, where we bring story time. As well at 9:30. So, and that is to raise awareness and promote the positive interactions that police officers have. So we get a lot of our referrals from those two, bases of people and children. And then those people tell other people and the businesses and
so
people
word of
just
mouth,
get involved.
Always the best form of advertising.
Yes. It's very organic.
You shouldn't forget your website.
This is true.
The
website is important.
My daughter and son-in-law have my grandson in a cooperative school in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And she picked this up because they both want to move over here.
Right.
And they came. They they sent us down, my wife and myself, to check it out. And we came back and said, this is perfect.
Wow, thank you.
And she came out over the holidays and visited you all and said,
did you come for a tour?
Perfect. Sorry?
Did yeah. I thought I remembered yeah. you. You thought you looked familiar.
See? You make friends.
That's how this goes.
Yeah, you're looking at your face.
You made friends on Viewpoint with Cedar and Friends.
The holidays and she was just as impressed.
Thank you.
So, John, why the switch? You were in law enforcement, and I assume you're just like our friend Dr. Moore, and you're retired.
Yes.
Why the switch from, I mean, you could be like everybody else, just relax in a hammock, go to Jamaica, and just do your thing. Or, you know. But here you are, you're really giving back to society in a big way, because not everybody was born to fit in that box of a traditional school. And I just love the idea that you're giving people an avenue for this.
Well, thank you. This is definitely 100% bigger than me, my wife, my children, my family. But, you know, I am a 9/11 first responder. So I have a very unique perspective on life from that day.
Reborn.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you are part of a family, and like so many other families, obviously, you know, when you see that you can do better, you can be better for your children, for your wife, your family, you take those steps. So, you know, when it came to my son, you know, who is now 8, you know, there was nothing that I won't do. So and now obviously now for my daughter as well, my daughter's 4, so I want to be the change with my wife. We want to be the change that just turns around and says to them, look, we can do this together. You know, we're not, I'm not one, we are together. And you know, when people see that, it resonates with them, and that is pretty huge.
Powerful.
To us. Yes,
yeah,
extremely. Yes.
Well, you know, you hear stories of people who've been in aircrafts that crashed and they survived, and you'll hear a high-profile attorney would say, well, I was working 12 to 16 hours a day, but now I don't want to go back to my firm. I would rather teach.
Mm-hmm.
Something does happen when we have these experiences in life. It does. I believe it's divine intervention at some point, and you know, whatever it is, something changes in you or in that person, because I follow a lot of these stories. And I see that. But I wanted to ask you, one of my friends who is a teacher wanted to know, she asked me to ask you guys about the standardized testing with the Eco Verde school. How does that work?
So we're not a standardized school.
Right.
And what that means for us is that we're standards aware. We understand what children are learning in a traditional school, and we want to honor that trajectory so that if our students moved out of the Verde Eco School, they could hold their own in a classroom of their peers. But we want to go beyond it. You know, if there are children in fifth grade and they're excited by pre-calculus, well, why not? That might not be on the trajectory if they were in fifth grade in a public school, but why can't we go into it?
Right.
If we're guided by our students' interests and we know that children are more engaged and they're better learners when they're excited, why not allow them to lead a bit of that journey? So we, as being licensed by the Department of Education, we're required to show growth. So all of our students compile a portfolio that shows their mastery of different concepts, but we're not as focused on test taking as other schools. We just feel that our world is moving in a direction where standardization can be excelled upon by computers. You know, we can teach computers to do
a lot. Yeah, look what the Khan Academy is doing.
Oh, they can.
Yes,
and computers can do a lot of this work for us in terms of standardization, but what makes humans unique? What makes us unique is that we can think as individuals. We can think with empathy and heart. We can think outside of a right or wrong answer and say, well, there's a middle here.
Yeah.
How do I approach this middle in a way that a computer can't? So we'd like to help to cultivate the leaders of tomorrow by saying, you're more than just a test.
Right. And I find that your school also, it gives one a sense that there's more compassion.
Yeah.
Because when it's almost like, you know, we all talk about having a kinder, gentler world, but you all are creating a kinder, gentler world right here in O'Galley, Florida,
yeah.
In Melbourne. I'm amazed.
Work.
Yes.
It's hard work. And you wouldn't think that being sharing kindness and consideration would be hard work. Mm-hmm. But you know what? It's not our default.
Well, you
it's
start with yoga.
As human
beings. You start with yoga in the morning and meditation, and then you ease into the other subjects, which I think is great, because, you know, we see so much bullying going on in our schools. We see it online. And I know for a fact there's something about meditation that Absolutely. That connects you with your soul and your surroundings and what's going on in our world and our people around us, right?
Absolutely.
And I like that you do that. So the other question is, what is a multi-age classroom and what are the benefits? Now, coming from a family of 18 brothers and sisters, we had a multi-age classroom.
How much did you learn from your brothers and sisters?
A lot.
You
want to know the truth? A lot. You know what? We actually
had... Some things I probably shouldn't have learned. Right?
Whoa! Don't tell
Mom! We actually had a social security system built into the family.
Mm-hmm.
We had a healthcare system built into the family. Right. We had a school built into the family because you learn from each other. We had our own camp of people. So I love what you're doing. Kind of sounds like how I was raised because, you know, one had to braid hair. One had to learn to cook. One had to sweep the courtyard. One helped my father in the shop. My father taught us the word overdraft from the time we can walk. And so we all knew when he came home with goods for the shop, we would say overdraft, you know, because he taught. And then he would explain to us what an overdraft meant and what happens to us if the bank comes in and we don't have enough groceries in the store to sell to the customers.
This is real life.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of bringing me back to my childhood. So tell us about your classroom and the multi-age part of it.
Yes. So multi-age classrooms harken a bit to that one-room schoolhouse model of learning and teaching in that education is not one size fits all, right? You could have a five-year-old kid who may be academically on par with an eight-year-old kid, but that five-year-old in a traditional learning system would be relegated to a kindergarten classroom and not able to interact with work that would engage him intellectually. So by having multi-age classrooms, we're able to allow children to move forward when they're ready. They're able to engage and interact with peers, social peers, where they can walk through life as individuals, not as a third grader, but as
independent thinkers. They're independent.
Yes.
Yeah. So, John, one of the things that I'm sensing as I speak with Ayanna, I have to come for my tour. I know I do. Yeah.
I don't even have kids. I'm coming.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would assume that you don't have a lot of children calling in sick with a bellyache and a tummy ache because they look like they're excited to come to school. Field trips? Anybody would love those field trips.
Yes.
For the most part, you know, and we have a big framework in our school that's committed to social emotional work. And that's that work of kindness, of consideration. But again, like I was saying before, it's not our default as human beings. We kind of protect ourselves. So we're learning how to teach children to be considerate, to be kind, to stop and take a look at somebody else and say, well, how's this person feeling before I move on? You know, so it's been a journey in seeing children who are coming from maybe a traditional school who are anxious. And who do view school as this place that produces anxiety? What's the test? Who's this kid? Yeah, am I going to get along in this class? And we've had to spend time often with our kids who transfer in saying, you're safe. This is a safe place.
Right.
You know, we're not going to pressure you to do anything. We're going to say, we're going to take this journey
your
with
own
where
pace.
You are.
You're learning
yes,
your own
where
pace.
You are. We want you to learn. We want you to grow. We want you to master concepts. If you want to go to college, we want you to go to college. But we're not going to tell you that's the only thing that you need to do. Let's honor your personal journey. And that in and of itself, we've seen sometimes can be anxiety producing for some parents because we've all gone through a very different system. We've gone through a system that says you go through middle school, you go through high school, you take that SAT, you ace that SAT, and maybe you'll get into Harvard.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But what about those gray areas for those kids who don't follow that trajectory? So they go through middle school and high school with tremendous amounts of guilt and anxiety. I'm not a good student. I have no future. Well, what if we could reframe that and tell them you do have a future. Your future is whatever you dictate. And let's find what your strengths are and develop your strengths. You're not a great reader. So what? You're a beautiful artist. Let's work on that.
Right.
You know, but for us as parents, oftentimes when we see these kids, it's us. It's us as parents that share this anxiety and this judgment and this framework. You must be this.
Well, it's the way we're programmed.
Yes.
And being Indian, I can't speak to any
just
other race.
Say,
but it's almost like that's in the womb. Yeah. From the womb to the tomb. You know, it's like, and you know, like an Iranian friend of mine once said, you know, the Iranian will say, doctor, lawyer, engineer, or loser.
Right.
You know, there's no place in between. And now people are beginning, even like in my own family, we were very fortunate that my dad had the vision that if you were creative, he will help you how to create something in life to sustain your life and make money out of it. That's right. What they do, right?
That's right.
But John, so I wanted to ask you, so some of the teachers, do they undergo a background check? They all go through a background check?
Everybody goes through a background check through FDLE. So we have volunteers. You can volunteer on the community garden, which we created in 2016.
Yeah. September 11th.
And where is the community garden?
So the community garden is attached to O'Galley Square and the yoga garden. It's right in between. It's a white fence.
I see that all the time. Yes. I had no idea it was part of the school.
That is also the agricultural teaching garden for the school children, one of many. But there are ways, if you don't have children, that you can get involved.
Hey, play music. You got a music program?
Well, actually, every first Friday on the community garden, we do Salsa Under the Stars, where we give the community free salsa lessons so they can come and learn salsa and dance to bring diversity into the O'Galley Arts District.
And we just had a donation of like 60 ukuleles.
Yes.
Oh, ukulele orchestra. Artist.
Yes.
So we have two minutes left.
Right.
Yeah. We have 2 minutes left. And I do know that one of my friends, I was talking to her about this yesterday at work, and she was asking me, how does the homeschooling approach works with you guys? Mm-hmm. Do you take homeschoolers as well?
We do. And what we've seen is a lot of private schools starting to create this hybrid where homeschooling families can join, supplement what they're doing at home so that they can get a transcript or show growth, but continue to do whatever they want in terms of their experience. So we do offer a homeschool supplement where children can join us part-time, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, kind of have the best parts of the eco-school experience and then supplement their learning at home.
Right. So give us the website one more time and the Facebook page. Sure. This is amazing. This is one of the nicest things about Brevard. Mm-hmm. We have so many people in Brevard that have nonprofits or volunteer or just give back to the community. And you guys are giving back big time. We needed this because there are too many people that don't fit that mold of traditional schooling and they want something like this. So I applaud you for it.
Thank you.
Give us your website.
So the website is verdeecoschool.org and you can find us on Facebook at Verde Eco School.
Yes. Two words come to mind with them, right? Self-awareness and mindfulness.
Yes. Yes.
And how can we create a more beautiful world and to make people understand that this body is just a temple and it houses such a beautiful soul, and we should not be labeling people, whether you call them racist or divide or promote fear or hatred. We shouldn't be doing that.
That's right. It's too beautiful to do that, right? We're all individuals.
We're in it to win it.
Yes.
So hopefully all of our listeners will be checking out the Eco Verde. So Verde Eco?
Verde Eco School.
Verde Eco School. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Name first.
Yeah.
And we've posted that all on our Facebook page as well. But we're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back with the Brevard Homeless Coalition.
The Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, and so and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haul away available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast.
That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MedFast Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Piggy on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on WWBC in sunny Cocoa, Florida. I like to say that sometimes, even if, I hope it's sunny. I'm not sure. You're full of love bugs. My cousin from Toronto couldn't wait to go back after the wedding because of the love bugs. They kept getting the nerf into everything. And we're here live on FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. And I'm very grateful to have such a packed studio. We have Ayanna and John Verdi. Thank you so much. We have Dr. Moore. We have Mr. Crump. We have our friend George. Ellen is here. Yes. And before we go to our second segment, I know that Ayanna and John had one more thing to add. I made a comment that they would be expanding pretty soon. And then she said
that we're just awarded a Drexel Fund Fellowship. So the Drexel Fund Fellowship is worth about $100,000. They come in and recruit and scale innovative schools of promise, and they chose our school. They found us and said, we'd like to set you on this path to a sustainable education that can share promise with children in underserved communities and around the nation. Are you willing? We say, well, yes.
Well,
I guess we are willing.
I do have a piece of land on US 1 that's been sitting there.
I was just going to say,
if
see
I could
that.
Just pull that string with that husband of mine, you never know what could happen.
That's right.
God is good. You never know. He makes things happen, right? But so our second segment is with our friend, Dr. Miriam Moore, who is the Executive Director of the Brevard Homeless Coalition. Welcome to the show, Dr. Moore, again.
Thank you.
And thank you for being my friend and coming to my house and having mulberries with me.
Oh, that was
wonderful. I wasn't there with my husband.
That was wonderful.
And Dr. Moore brought with her a friend, Mr. Rob Cramp. And Rob was born and, well, he was raised and educated in England. He's 40 years in the corporate business. Lots of experience, and he's going to tell us a little bit about himself and why he got involved with the Brevard Homeless Coalition.
Very good question. I got involved because I was persuaded that we had a homeless problem in Brevard, and at the time we did. We had a bigger, funnily enough, numbers wise, we had a bigger homeless problem than we have today. We had well over 1,000 homeless in Brevard coming out of the recession. But actually, many of those people who were made homeless were really living paycheck to paycheck, and they once the economy improved, then they moved, got back into jobs, they got back into their houses again. So we have a different issue today. Homelessness in Brevard today is running around probably around 1,000 people, But if you count those people who are couch surfing, they're not technically homeless, then you've got at least, we think, at least 2,000 children who are technically homeless because they're living with somebody else. They're not living in their own home.
Right.
And you can imagine what that's going to do for the development of those children going down the road.
Right.
So we still have a big challenge.
So I read you also oversee the Avon International.
I used to.
You used to. Now, I do use Avon products up to today. I just wanted to let you know. And for the wedding, my daughter hired this woman to come and do hair and makeup. And they said, do you want us? I said, I just can't get away from my Avon very, very nice lipstick. I have like 12 of them. And they said, Mom, you got to give up the Avon products. That's, I can't. So I just want to tell you, they do make good products. And we get hooked on them.
Side note.
But I feel the connection, right?
Right.
But so how did you transition from that? What, I mean, you got involved. Did a friend, word of mouth? How did you get involved with Dr. Moore and the coalition?
I was teaching an adult education class in global affairs. Since I've traveled to over 40 countries, I have some experience, and I use it to develop a course where we go around the world and discuss each area of the world every week. And a fellow teacher was a chairman of the board of this agency, Housing for Homeless, and persuaded me to come on the board, and I realized that I could help them with some of the issues they have. And so I came off the board, joined the agency, and then my predecessor retired 4 years ago, and the board asked me to take over.
And what do you say to those people that says, I'm retired, but I just don't have the time? You make the time, right?
Yeah, you do. I think it's a question of define time. How do you use it effectively? You know, it's I'm not big on cruises or golf. And so, you know, your retirement opportunities become somewhat limited in Brevard. So this is a great opportunity.
So what is the homeless situation today in Brevard, besides the couch surfing and the people who are waiting on places?
It's relatively stable. It's certainly not going down. It's about that we count, we, the community, driven really by Dr. Moore and the Brevard Homeless Coalition, organize an account every January. We literally go out and count every homeless person in the county. We don't find every homeless person. But if we do it the same way each year, then we get a trend. And the trend right now, over the last 2 years, it's been fairly stable. One of the trends we did notice this year was, though, the people, victims of domestic violence had increased significantly.
Right. And there's such a stigma and shame attached to that, why people don't come forward when they're homeless. I mean, I've known so many people that would, they'd have to put up with so much stress and ill treatments at the hands of family and friends because they're afraid to come forward and say what's going on in their lives.
Well, often too with domestic violence, it's an ongoing problem, and so there's severe limitations on privacy, what we can talk about, what we can say,
because
we don't want to getting out into the community. These people are involved.
Yeah. So what are some of the factors that contribute to people being homeless?
Well, obviously lack of funds. If you don't have the money for your rent or your mortgage, then you become homeless. Now, those lack of funds can be caused by, like you said, family issues. 40% of it. We have around, right now, probably about 120 individuals and families in our 80 properties. And 40% of those families are single parents, usually mothers with children, because the only bad decision they made is they chose the wrong partner.
Yeah.
And so they broke up the family, and the husband was the male partner was the breadwinner. And they have no income, so they become homeless. So that is one. Poor budgeting is, you know, people make wrong decisions. We all make wrong decisions. And budgeting is often an issue. People don't do it wisely, you know. Healthcare costs. You know, we are not a state that's being blessed by the expansion of Medicaid. We have people with huge medical issues every day because they can't get on available. Medicaid is not available to them. And they have to choose, do they pay the rent or do they pay for their children's health care?
Yeah, we had, last week, we had Jo Shim on our show, who's with the League of Women Voters. I'm not sure if you know Jim. Jo, she's also from England, and she's married to a Jamaican. That's my connection with the curry chicken right there.
Everywhere.
So when Jo and I meet, she's been at my home, and she's had the curry chicken. But we were talking about the Medicaid expansion and how it affects the homelessness, and we talked a little bit about the Sadowski Fund and what was set aside for the state of Florida. And the sad thing is, you know, I don't know if a lot of politicians actually ask themselves, as a human being, in this temple that we all have, right? How does a person pay rent, car payment, car insurance, put food on the table, pay for health care, put gas in your car, make in between $10 to $12 an hour. Or even, let's say, $10 to $15. Mm-hmm. Let's even say $18 an hour. There are, I mean, the
rent is astronomical. Yeah, the
rent
right
in Brevard for places that used to be $500 for one bedroom is now $900 a month. So, I mean, I don't understand what happens with someone when they decide to run for office, when they become a politician, and when they race and they get up to Tallahassee or wherever they're going. At some point, you have to put yourself in somebody's shoes and ask yourself, how are they surviving?
Yeah, the reality of today in Brevard is nobody, an individual or a family, earning under $19,000 a year can afford anything. There is nothing available to them in Brevard at all. And for a family individual earning under $25,000, you just about can scrape in. You'll find a very poor area probably, and Coco is the last refuge of low-income housing. There's not much else out there.
Yeah.
So it's really, really a challenge. The other challenge we're facing now is, unfortunately, is an increased incidence of substance abuse and mental health issues, particularly the opioid crisis is hitting us hard.
Right. And Dr. Moore, I know we talked about this before when you came on the last show. What are some of the biggest challenges in addressing homelessness in Brevard?
A lot of it is perception, I think, and awareness, and just letting people know that we do have a problem in Brevard County, and there are ways that people can help. I was going to say just a minute ago when you were talking about the cost of like a family in Brevard County, it's over $55,000 just to maintain basic standard of living for a family of four, and that equates to over $28 an hour. So, you know, a lot of people will argue we need a minimum wage hike or whatever, but a living wage in Brevard County would actually be over $28 an hour based on our housing costs. Yeah,
right.
It's not a minimum wage we need; it's a living wage that we need. It's different everywhere we go, and in Brevard, it's quite high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And well, that's when you say words do matter. Instead of saying minimum wage, say living wage.
Correct.
It makes more sense, right? Mm-hmm. And I wish some politicians do listen to our show. They should start saying that instead. You know, but you know what? The last show we did about this, and we talked about substance abuse and the reentry program, we spent so much money in our prisons. We spent so much money after the fact. Why aren't we taking all that money that they spend to lock people up before people get into prisons, before they get into jail, and spend it when children are young into education about things? It blows my mind when you look at the budget, how much is spent on law enforcement and prisons and how little is spent on education.
Right.
Because I think the key to everything in life is education, whether it's sex education or education about homelessness or budgeting. Somebody said something about, Mr. Crump said something about that. A lot of these people just don't know how to stretch a dollar. Nobody taught them. Yes, of course.
Financial literacy.
Well, Lee Brevard did a study a couple of years ago on the cost of homelessness in Brevard County and found that it's about $28 million, and that's just our health care. $22 million of it is health care every year the hospitals are wasting because people who are homeless use the emergency rooms as their primary care, and it costs money. And then there's a lot of money that goes out to law enforcement, our judicial system, and of course education. It costs $7,500 a year for the average child in the public school. So if a child is homeless for a period of time, and they say after 30 days really that trauma is permanent to some degree, a child has a greater chance of losing a grade, being held back a grade, that's a cost to society that's going to we're going to pay for later on, another year that they have to attend school. That's tax money that comes out of our pockets. That's a year that child is not going to be in college or waits to graduate, and in a year that our economy suffers, that they won't be in the workforce. So it has a long-term effect.
Right. And mentally, too. I mean, we all talk about social development and mental development and physical and financial, but really and truly, if we have the resources, they're just not allocated in the right places. So I wanted to ask Mr. Crump, can homelessness be eliminated from what you've seen?
Probably not. I mean, here's a person who 2 years ago we held a big awareness event. We had the sheriff there. We had city mayors there. And we said, we're all going to join together and eliminate homelessness by 2020. And the reality is, it's a long way from that. We've got to recognize, not only as a local community, a national community, inequality is increasing in this country. And inequality creates homelessness. It really does, because there isn't enough. You know, you talk about things like the minimum wage, you know, and people say, well, you raise the wage and then people shed employment, so unemployment goes up. What they don't see is putting that money in then into the community, because poor people spend more of their income than rich people do. And this community has not grasped that. Now, if you give more poor people more money, they will spend it in the community. They won't lock it away for a fund, for a bequest or something like that. They will spend it back in the community. So what goes around comes around.
Right. So how can we meet these challenges going forward? I mean, what are some of the things that the Brevard Homeless Coalition is proposing that we do?
I think Miriam and the rest of the coalition, we're trying to change the whole, get engaged. We're trying to engage the community in homelessness. It's easy with a word like homelessness. If you're progressive, you say, well, the government should be taking care of it. And if you're conservative, you say, well, the government shouldn't be involved, but companies will take care of it, or the churches will take care of it. It's, homelessness is always somebody else's problem. Oh, I agree, it's terrible to have homeless people, but there are ways of dealing with it. Well, what about you? Well, no, somebody else is going to do
right.
it. So I think we have to engage in a dialogue where people understand that these are not the people on the traffic lights with the hard cardboard car. That's a fraction. Many of those people aren't even homeless. It's a way of getting money for their habit, quite frankly.
Right.
It's the homeless people, people who have not, they haven't made, the worst decision they made, many of these women, is they chose the wrong guy.
Right.
And we are penalizing them as a society for making that wrong decision.
Well, you know,
we've got to change that. We've also got to get the community behind us in terms of allowing us to provide affordable housing. We need more housing. Clearly, if nobody under 19,000 a year can afford housing in this county, we've got to provide more housing that can be done that way. You know, the only way they can get it at the moment is to get Section 8 housing vouchers, or if they're military, they get HUD-VASH vouchers from the VA. But we need a way of providing the kind of housing that anybody can afford.
Right, and a lot of people don't understand when you say things about the homeless or people who on vouchers or Medicaid, and you always hear people say, well, welfare queens. Well, really and truly, the children are the ones who are really suffering when people speak like that.
Right.
I always say to myself, I don't understand how someone could be pro-life but anti-family. Yeah. If you're going to be pro-life, you have to be pro-child, pro-family, because the ones who are suffering are the children. You can't just care about them when they're in somebody's womb. Like my father used to say, you've got to care from the womb to the tomb. Because there's a dash in between from the womb to the tomb. Yeah. They need healthcare. They need education. They need affordable housing. They need food. They need somebody to mentor and guide them. And I'm so grateful that there's people like you, Mr. Crump, and Dr. Moore, that actually does this kind of work to bring the awareness to so many of us.
Well, I made the point at the beginning about what happened after the recession and the end of, in this county, the end of the shuttle program. That created homelessness, but short-term homelessness. What we're left with now is, even nationally, and it provides very similar to the national, over 60% of homeless people have either substance abuse or mental health issues. Now, those are critical, because they're not like the people who were homeless 5-6 years ago, just after the recession. Find them a job, stabilize them, and they're off. You know, we had them maybe for 6 months, for a year. These people now have problems they may have for the rest of their lives. We are not, Miriam and I are not going to solve that problem in the next 12 or 24 months. Society's got to understand we've got people here who need help probably for the rest of their lives. And how much low-income assisted living is there in this county? Virtually none at all. What are we going to, what are the older people?
Or even substance abuse. I mean, you go into the emergency room, they may Baker Act you, you may get a room at the circles of care, and then you come out, and then what?
Then what happens?
I mean, so many people are being locked up, and they need mental help. They don't need to be in prison.
Right.
And we don't really have the resources
we
for that.
We have to
either.
Come up with one innovation. We're talking negatives here. Let me talk about support.
Yeah,
something
there
called
we go.
there's a great program called Peer Support a Certification. We have taken clients of ours in our homes, and we're training them for 40 hours. for 40-hour training course, followed by 500 hours of basic counseling. These are people who were in substance abuse or had mental health issues. So they've walked the walk, and now they can talk the talk. And these people are trained how to empathize with people in similar situations. So we give them 40 hours of basic education on counseling, then 500 hours. Then they sit for a certified, a state exam, and they become certified peer resource specialists. And these are people with no more than a high school degree. And they're now registered professionals. That is one way you can get people into the community. It doesn't cost a lot of money. These people are earn it working while they're interns.
Yeah, they're just willing to they're willing to learn and to help.
Well, you see, the two major problems with people with substance abuse. First of all, admitting you've got a problem, and the second one is finding somebody who has been there, who can understand what you're going
through.
Someone
who cares.
Right.
People
these
just need that.
These peer support people.
Right.
Are opportunities for them.
So what resources does the Brevard Homeless Coalition need going forward? How can we help? We'll put it on our website. We'll spread the word of mouth to people. What else can we do?
Well, basically, you can save money.
Yeah.
Funding is always, you know, funding to help us produce housing, funding, counseling, housing provide... needs funding. You need if you're going to build something, you know, right now we've got an opportunity on a piece of land in Mather Street just round the corner from your school, but we need to get the down payment in order to be able to develop the land. Then we're going to build three houses on there. That is serious money, and then we need the community to understand that the money, where's the money going to come from. That's one of the other. The other is obviously, and money for counseling, you know, this has got to come from some. If and there's no indication that Florida is going to expand Medicaid anytime soon, we need more money for counseling. It really is very important.
Right. And I like what the mission of the Brevard Homeless Coalition is for our listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today. Their mission is to provide a framework of services to prevent and eliminate homelessness in Brevard County. And that is so true, because I think it's all about awareness and education. When you could help people to steer them in the right direction, it will help. But, you know, it has to come middle school, high school, before people leave high schools. Are we giving them the right tools so that they could succeed in life, so that they won't fail? And I don't think that everyone has that opportunity at all. I've seen where a lot of my friends would say, well, I'm sending my children to Haiti for 2 weeks in the summer from my church. Whoop-de-doo for you. But what does the person do when they return from Haiti? What did they do when they return from Peru? Well, it's not about you're able to afford to send your child on a church camp because you want to go and help people in an underprivileged part of the world. Once you go to those countries and you see how people live and how sad it is, you should come back with a renewed effort so that we don't have those things in America. Right. We don't have homelessness. We don't have children who are starving in schools. We don't have politicians that are putting money into their pockets and not caring about the community. And I often wonder if people are really paying attention to what they're seeing, what they're doing, their actions, their thoughts, because I don't think a lot of them come back and say, well, let me be that person who would join the Brevard Homeless Coalition, or I'll join, you know, the United Way. There are groups that people would just pass it on to the other person all the time. How do we get more people engaged to say, I've seen it, I've been there, and I want to help?
I think if they want to help, I think that we need to communicate the size of the problem. You're talking about, you know, going overseas and seeing people who... kids who don't get enough to eat. Over 60% of the children in public schools in Brevard get food assistance.
Yeah.
Get financial assistance to be able
they're
to
starving
get
over the right. weekend.
How do we break the cycle? How do we break the cycle of homelessness? We look at the children, we've probably got any time between 40 and 60 children in our homes, and we constantly discuss how do we break the cycle so those children don't end up like their parents have done. And it's a real challenge. It really it's a community challenge. We certainly we can't do it. We're one of the biggest houses with 80 properties in the county. We cannot do it on our
own. Right. So if an individual business wants to help fight homelessness, what should they do?
Call me.
Yes. or they can just go on the website and...
call me. I'll give my number. You want my number right now?
Yeah. I know. You could give out the website, the Facebook page.
Right.
And for them, go ahead.
Okay. First of all, call me at 321-639-0166, and I'm an extension 118.
Or they could join your school and get...
Or you can email me at rob@housingforhomeless.org. Very simple. Or go to our website, which is www.housingforhomeless.org.
Now, Ellen, I don't know if you got a chance to look at their website, but they have a lot of events, and they got a lot of pictures up there. Any events coming up that we can share with our listeners to
Absolutely.
Get involved?
Absolutely. Our big event. We are actually 30 years old this year, and we wanted to do something special. So in September, we're having our 30th anniversary celebration at the Indy River Colony Club in Vieira. And you're welcome to come along or help sponsor us. Right now, we're looking for sponsors. This is not a cheap event. It is to attract business leaders from all over the county, as well as community leaders. And we require a lot of interest in it. So please mark the date, September the 14th. And we're welcome to hear from anybody who would like to help us set up that event.
Yeah, the truth is everyone needs a place that they can call home.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it's large or small, but it's if it's home, it's your refuge. From the world, right?
I obviously talk around, do a lot of talks around the county, and I often start off and I get the whole audience to close their eyes for 30 seconds. And I say, now imagine you're driving home, you're coming up the road, and you're now turning into your driveway, and you see your house there in the evening. What do you think about when you see that house? Do you feel about security? Maybe the family are there waiting for you, maybe it's love. Maybe it's pride. Hey, I worked really hard to get this home. I said, whatever those feelings are, homeless people don't have any of those feelings. And when they're deprived, anybody's deprived of that kind of comfort and security for a period of time, they develop problems. So homelessness itself can create mental health problems, can create substance abuse issues.
Right. And it's not only, I mean, people have this image that a homeless person is a person who's at the roadside with his arms.
Wrong.
That's not true, right? I know we've talked about that before.
Yes.
How many families are living one paycheck away from losing their home? So many people, if you miss a couple of mortgage payments, I mean, you know, then you get the letter and then you can't function.
We even talk about it. It's the people that are working right next to us. It's not even like that they're not working.
Poor.
It's the working poor. That 14%
of people in Brevard are living below the poverty level. 14%.
A car breaks down.
And 27% are what we call asset limited. And those are your paycheck to paycheck families. So more than a quarter of our families in Brevard County are one paycheck away from being homeless.
Right.
Well, you know, 19,000, that's $10 an hour, shall we say. Mm-hmm. If you're earning under
The way you guys break it down to the hour.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You're earning under $10 an hour.
With 1 minute to go, I would love to have you back to talk a little bit more about this. I wish we had more time.
It always goes so quick.
So we
want to make
sure. Last minute.
Our BrevardHomelessCoalition.org website is back up and running. We're working on getting all the provider agencies linked to it now. But there is a donate page. If you have anything, it doesn't matter if it's money or if it's hygiene products. We've had people donate burial plots. We will be able to distribute those to any of our 70-plus organizations accordingly, and I promise you nothing will be wasted.
I'm going to donate my husband's time and give you a website, too.
And verdeecoschool.org.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Verdeecoschool.org. We're also raising money for an urban adventure garden in the Ogalley Arts District, so please feel free to go to our donate page, verdeecoschool.org/donate, to learn more.
Another fantastic edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And folks, please make sure you join us each and every Monday right here on AM 1510 WWBC.